This is the Awful Announcing Podcast. Here's your host, Brandon Contes.
All righty, welcome to episode 40 of the Awful Announcing Podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Contes, and this week we are joined by NBA on TNT host and also Shaq's podcast co-host, Adam Lefko, who is like a stalwart of Awful Announcing coverage going back more than 10 years when he was a local sports anchor going viral. I'm pretty sure you were even a guest on a past iteration of this podcast as well, but thanks for taking time to come on the podcast again, and kudos for going viral more than a decade ago.
I really do thank Awful Announcing for helping me. I don't want to say leave Louisville, Kentucky, because I love Louisville, Kentucky.
Yeah.
But I'll never forget when I woke up and a YouTube video I had posted was at like 90,000 views. And I went on Twitter and Awful Announcing had posted it. And from it started a snowball effect that has now gotten me here 10, 11 years later, working with Shaq and filling in for Ernie Johnson. And it's been an awesome journey, man, but I definitely always appreciate you guys.
And anybody can still go viral, but it's harder to go viral now and make any sort of impact. Like people go viral and it's almost the same as having 10 seconds of fame at this point. They're forgotten about as soon as the next video comes up on their feed. But you started to almost like build an audience that was waiting for your next video for at least a portion of your career there in Kentucky. Did you set out to go viral early on in your career?
No, I reached a point where I realized that I was broadcasting the local news, and I had already, like, if you had been paying attention to social media, you knew what happened that day. And so at 10 p.m., I'm like saying it to people that only watch the news and were not on social media. And so for me, it was more of just a frustration of, am I really going to sit here and play this straight? And I, even when I was like younger, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, this is definitely like an 8 Mile related activity. I've always enjoyed like freestyling, and I've always enjoyed when I'm on camera trying to come up with things really quickly that other people can't, and just trying to mess with people. And so it really came from, you know, it was 40 wrestling references, 40 Seinfeld references, 40 rap references. And so for me, it was, I was just bored. And that's the thing. Shaq and I talked about this last night. If you think you can plan going viral, you're just going to make yourself look stupid. Like you're a clown show. But if things are natural, because the stuff that goes viral are real moments,
yeah,
that you can't control. But you're right, dude. Like I was viral for like 3 or 4 weeks in a row. Like yeah. Now you're viral for legitimately an hour. And yeah. Then something else is knocking you off of the spot. And I think part of it's because everything in our world now is like a vertical feed to where things just get replaced at the top. Where before, we're much more used to web pages and desktops where, hey, man, if that's sitting on the left side of the screen, it could be there for a week and a half. And it really would resonate for a while.
What was the confidence level at that point that like you were going to make a long career in sports media?
I mean, I'm sure you've talked to 39 other people. I've had it since I was in Hastings, Nebraska. Like when I was a one man band, like I've had it since broadcast journalism school at Syracuse, where it was like, this is it. This is all I can do. Like, I'm not qualified to do anything else. It's either this or go work for my dad's refrigeration company. Like, and so for me, I just had so many people, even when I was younger, that were like, oh, you're going to do it. That there's that part of you that's like, I'm not going to prove all these people wrong. And I think when it went viral and I started having interviews where instead of me having to convince people who I was or that I could handle doing more national stuff, that I got seen as an internet guy at a time where all of these traditional broadcasters were trying to figure out how to have a bigger digital imprint. I mean, Bleacher Report was bought by Turner a few, like very soon before I went to work there.
Yeah.
And so I always tried at that time to position myself as someone in a digital world that has a traditional upbringing. And so that if you need me to cover breaking news or you need me to cover a story that's a little bit more intense, I have that ability. And then it worked when I transitioned to TV full time.
How did you end up in the Midwest? Because you're from in or around Philadelphia. You went to Syracuse, and then you started out working in Nebraska and then to Kentucky. So was that just like kind of taking whatever you could get at that point?
I had a box of 40 VHS tapes, 40 news, 40 sports that I had made before I graduated. And I just had envelopes and cover letters. And each of them were like, I would love to come and work in Bangor, Maine. I would love to come and work in Charleston, West Virginia. And the one place that said you could do news and a little bit of sports was Hastings, Nebraska. And they let me do high school football on Friday nights. And so the first three and a half years, I was a news reporter. I had an agent one time tell me that she could get me to Philadelphia within a year if I stayed as a news reporter. But if I went to sports, she wouldn't represent me because it's too competitive. And there's too many people in sports that look like me. And so you have those moments along the way. But yeah, man, 18-5 in Hastings, Nebraska. Amazing people. City council meetings. I covered a goat fashion show one time. I did a lot of stories on like the EPA and the Environmental Protection Agency. And I remember doing a story in front of a cornfield where I was like, for some reason, the company Amazon has bought this land behind me. There, apparently it's going to be like servers. Like that's the kind of stuff that I was covering. Me and my dad had a conversation and I was like, the quicker I start, the quicker that I can prove to people that I can do it. And so I'm not going to wait for the perfect job or the sports job. Let me just get reps and get on camera and get it going that way.
Was everybody that you went to Syracuse kind of in the same boat those early years, or were you watching other people's careers take off before you?
Oh, you know those graphics where it's like most three-pointers and then the bar graphs are constantly changing and people are shifting? That's the thing about this career is that I knew some people that were national immediately. I knew some people that were in small markets like me. I knew people that were somehow on regional sports networks.
Yeah.
I watched people like Nick Wright was a year older than me. I watched him go the radio route. Danny Parkins as well. Boris Sanchez was a year younger than me, and now he's like a midday host on CNN. You know what I mean? Like, I think what I tell young people now is it is very natural to be competitive. Because to get anywhere, you're going to be competitive. But if you don't make friends with people in these classes and realize that, like, you're going to be working in the same industry for decades if you were lucky enough, be friends with them and don't make it overly competitive. Because I just remember back in the day, like, jealousy is the thief of joy, and everyone would just be comparing. Dude, I'm in Hastings, Nebraska. I'm eating chicken fried steak and – you know, dollar beer night every night. And my friends are in New York. My friends are in LA. And I'm listening to, you know, like rap music on the treadmill every morning being like, I'm a make it, I'm a do this. So yeah, like you look around, but in the end it's, if you're happy and you're trying hard, you'll be okay. And just be grateful for that.
Were you a big Seinfeld fan before doing the Seinfeld cast?
Do you remember when they launched the box set DVD and that was like a really big deal? Oh yeah. I had all of them. I had all of them. There were two shows that were always on when I got home from school.
Yeah.
Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and Seinfeld. And so Will Smith and Jerry Seinfeld are absolutely in my like Mount Rushmore of influences of whether it's like how to be on camera or how to talk. My other two, I'm literally just thinking about this right now, would probably be Stuart Scott and I don't know, Dave Chappelle. But definitely Seinfeld and Will Smith are definitely in there just because every day. Like that was, it was perfect.
Did you want to be a Sports Center anchor? I feel like the Seinfeld thing is something that you could have absolutely pictured Rich Eisen doing, you know, in 1997.
I think when I was growing up, when we were growing up, that was the outlet. You know, that was the place to – I was talking about this the other night. Like, dude, I was so in it where I'd be like, man, John Anderson's underrated as a writer. Like, you hear that intro right there? Or – you would just like Berman and the noises he would make. And every night, like, oh man, yo, Neil Everett, though, like something about the way he plays off the other guy. So I always loved it and I always studied it. And then as I came up, the sports media world exploded. And then for me, it went from how are you going to handle a John Walsh interview? Because that was always what you heard is like, it's so hard to. I can try and build things and create my own ecosystem. And once you know, Twitter and Instagram and all the social media networks started opening up, I adjusted really quickly and was like, I want to be where the people are. I'm less concerned with an executive's approval. I'm more concerned with like wherever people are consuming things and we can have like good conversations and fun conversations. That's where I want to be. And then if I'm going to be honest, I've always had NBA on TNT ahead of SportsCenter because, oh, by the way, I'm removing Chappelle. My Mount Rushmore is Ahmad Rashad. That's the fourth one because when I looked at NBA on TNT, I would see Craig Sager interviewing a player and being like, did you hear what Chuck said about you? Like it was a sitcom.
Yeah.
And I loved Ahmad Rashad because he wasn't a reporter. It didn't seem like to me he was playing golf with Michael Jordan. And so I always was like, I'm never going to be that level of athlete, but I'd love to be that level of athlete adjacent and showcase what makes them so special. And so for me, like Ernie has always been the GOAT. But Ahmad Rashad has always been like the ethos of the spirit, you know?
Yeah. And then poor Dave Chappelle just getting bumped off the Mount Rushmore like that.
Sorry, bro. Well, because I could never be Dave Chappelle. Like Dave Chappelle's like, if you ask like who would be my top three guests to have on big podcasts with Shaq, like he's in that.
Yeah.
Because just the way he talks. But no, Ahmad Rashad for sure.
Have you ever met Jerry Seinfeld? I feel like he would be totally uninterested in learning about the Seinfeld cast and the impact that he had on your career.
Yeah, I would imagine he'd go, oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
I have to go. I'm like, all right. You know, I would be curious if he'd want to talk sneakers because I feel like he has owned that lane for a long time. But yeah, no, I don't know if you're like this. I go in with such low expectations when I meet people like that. That if they blow me away, that's great. If not, I'm really okay with, hey, Adam, really nice to meet you. That's all I want. Yeah. Like anything more than that is incredible.
Yeah. I think that, well, he has a movie coming out later this year, the Pop-Tart movie. So I feel like he could be a good potential guest. Oh. Like Shaq's big enough that if Seinfeld is doing a media tour, he should be on that podcast with you guys.
I'm going to tell the booking person. That's a good idea.
How'd you end up as Shaq's co-host? Is that something did you have to, I mean, obviously you've been working with him on Tuesdays now, but is that something that you had to, do you have to try out for it? Did Turner pick you? Did Shaq pick you?
He called me in August and said, hey, I want to take our relationship to the next level. Do you want to host my podcast? And I was like walking around Brooklyn and I was like, Bro, I'm not even going to ask anybody. Like, yeah, I'm in. Shaq and I have had, since our first Tuesday show together, like a very interesting instant connection where the first show, he showed up on set about 20 seconds before we went to air and was like, I'm Shaq. And I was like, I'm Lefko. Nice to meet you. And we start the show and he looks at my jacket, which was like small flowers. And he goes, are those bullet holes? And I was like, you know, you have like a full rundown and it's like your first ever national TV show. And you're like, you can barely hear him because his voice is so low. And I was like, no, bro, these are flowers. Second episode, we're getting ready to tape a segment. And have you ever seen the clip of Bruce Smith when he collapses during an interview?
Yeah. Yes. Okay.
He says, hey, man, you ever seen that clip? I said, oh, man, that clip is wild. And he's like, we should do that. And I was like, okay, so like maybe next week. And as I'm talking, he falls, trips himself, lands on the set, set breaks. Dwayne Wade and Candace Parker are like, what? What? I walk by because I'm the only one that knows what happened. And Shaq rolls over and winks at me. And that's when I realized, I was like, this guy's a 14-year-old. And then we did a video where he really likes when I do white guy voice. He just thinks it's hilarious. He's like, do white guy voice. And so we made a few videos where he was like lip syncing me doing white guy voice. And it went viral. It was like a few million views. And that's when he would keep saying to me, you and me can really do some crazy stuff together. Like he always like love. He says, you have a really good marketing brain. And so over the years, like I'd pitch him things and he'd pitch me things, but he would do his own podcast and I had my own podcast. And I guess when it opened up, he just reached out and it's been really cool to see the reaction to the really heartfelt things that he says. Like the crazy stuff is Shaq, like we're used to that. But when I watched like the Shaq doc that came out, you begin to realize like Shaq and Charles are both so much more intelligent than they will let you believe. And some of it is a character because they know that makes people comfortable. But if you doubt their intelligence, they're not going to look at you the same. But if you embrace their intelligence, then you can really tap into some really, really cool stuff. And Shaq is at a point in his life where he is brutally honest with anybody. He's gone through so much family-wise, career-wise, that now it's he trusts me. I trust him. We're going to have fun. And my goal is to throw 50 alley-oops every episode. If we have a guest and I have questions that I really want to ask, but Shaq's on a roll, I'm going to sit like this and remind myself to shut the F up. Because I would say this, Brandon, like the one of the most valuable things I've learned is just because you're on TV and just because your friends and family are excited to see you, it ain't about you. And the quicker that you can realize that the best people in the host chair are the ones that make everybody else look great. And I think that's the reason Shaq and I get along. He wants me to shoot sometimes, but I'm very happy throwing hoops.
So how similar is the role on the podcast compared to the NBA on TNT, where you are trying to set Shaq up on the podcast, you're trying to set him up on TNT, you're trying to set up Candace Parker and Jamal Crawford, but is there one where you're more comfortable taking your own shots than the other?
I have to on the podcast more, you know, because that's like a free flowing conversation where the personality has to come out.
Yeah.
TNT, I've heard Ernie describe it as being the worst traffic controller ever because you're trying to get like people to collide. But for me, I look at like as a custodian of TNT, where you have so many incredible people behind the scenes, whether it's graphics or video or highlights or interviews or all that, that I'm just trying to get from A to B and then from B to C. And then within that, either drop a really good informational nugget that someone at home that's paying attention will be like, oh, I learned something. Drop a reference. Not like something like Seinfeld Arbor that's like more of a deeper cut. The difference between TNT and Shaq really is TNT, I will hear people say things in the back when they're watching a game, and I want to surprise them on set, and I want their eyes to light up, because how did you even hear me say that and know that we're going to, this is good for the audience at home, where for the podcast, it's more of like a live exploration.
Yeah.
It's, do you have a story about this? It's, you know, Cam Newton just got jumped. Shaq, have you ever been jumped? And then maybe there's a story that we can all enjoy. But TNT is like one of those women that was like connecting phone calls in the 40s. You're very much just trying to make sure that it all happens.
Did we find out the real reason that Shaq was late last night? I know he's been late to Inside the NBA because of traffic a couple of times, and Barkley always calls him out. I didn't see the whole post game show last night to know if it was discussed beyond the hair bit that happened.
I am allowed to say a business obligation.
Oh, okay.
I can't get into it any more than that, though. But
so were you aware?
We covered for him.
Were you aware that he was
okay? But
oh, okay. So at what point did you?
I think
you
we
find
found out?
Out.
I was in the makeup chair, and so that was probably about 20-30 minutes before I went out to set. And what's funny for me is. You know the phrase, you don't need to be faster than the vampire, you just have to be faster than the other people. Like when you get the call from the producer and they're like, hey, so Shaq might not be there right away, it's gonna be okay. And I'm sitting there going, bro, we're fine. Like we're gonna, like it's basketball, we're gonna be fine. And so I enjoy when there's chaos. I find a lot of calm in chaos, especially because like I don't really use teleprompter.
Yeah.
It's not that I'm incapable of reading. I just think it's a lot more natural when if you already have your stats and you know where you need to go, I don't need to write it out ahead of time. I can get us there. And so I take those moments as a challenge. We found that out very, very close to airtime, which is, you know, just a thrill, just a good time.
Does it alter your preparation at all when you find that out? I mean, obviously you want him to be there. He's a big focal point of the show, but at the same time you have plenty to, you know what games you're focusing on already. You still have Candace there. You still have Jamal there. So does it change your preparation going into it?
It only changes it if we have some pre-produced elements that we definitely wanted Shaq to talk about. I also try to lean on Shaq when we're discussing big men. And we had an Embiid-less Sixers team in our early game, so I knew that it would be easier to get around. Yeah. My brain and what I started to talk about with the producer was, what are our post-game elements if this starts going a little bit long that we really need to adjust for? Because post-game, there's a lot of discussion. And also, Ernie, with Thursdays, it's Nito stat of the night. That's when you get into, we have meetings on Fridays about what can we really do for fun at the end of the show. And so then it goes, hey, let's say we had three panels where we were going to do like a draft. How do we adjust that just in case? So my brain with the producer starts thinking really far ahead. Previewing a basketball game, I can find a way to get there.
Yeah.
The only other note in my head is I'm gonna have to have a lot more. So then I start talking to the researcher, and it's like, hey, I got a few good nuggets. Could you give me just some upcoming schedules and some upcoming, like, then I'm working with him that I'm gonna need to be the third person in this conversation. I don't want to just go back and forth. I'm going to have to talk more.
Yeah.
And so it changes like that.
This is your fourth season doing the NBA on TNT Tuesdays. Is that,
there was a COVID split where I never know if that was two years or one year with a COVID intermission, but it's three. I think it is four.
What was the first season like? Because I think the first was the first week delayed because of when Kobe Bryant died.
Exactly.
And then like a month after that, or so was COVID.
Right.
So how difficult was it to get started then? Like, you have this show that you're planning and preparing for, that you knew about for a bit, and then all of a sudden it's kind of goes off the air after a month and you're not sure when it's coming back.
So, you know this, like, if media is the fourth estate and this growing media coverage is the fifth estate, the number one thing that everyone covering media wants to look at with a new studio show is chemistry. And so we did two or three episodes. We were kind of hitting our groove. Rudy Gobert touched the microphones. Everything shut down. I convinced them to do one digital episode where we did it all via Zoom. Even there, we went viral because Kavya, Dwayne Wade's like newborn baby daughter, they brought her on and Shaq was like, Uncle Shaqy. And she didn't react at all. So, like, I think that, like, I'm a big believer in group texting. And I just, because it's like, I, as a host, I never want to be like, man, I'm texting Jamal a lot, but I'm not texting. Like, I want to keep it all together so it feels like a more of a family atmosphere on and off the set. So the thing was, like, we really were trying to build that chemistry nonstop. Candace and I had worked together a bunch, and so that was easy. Wade and I built it very fast. And then towards the end of the year, I would go and hang out at his hotel room in Atlanta after, like, the shows. Why? Who would be calling a hotel room? I'm just picking up and hanging up. Hello, Adam. Yes. Gotcha. No, so I'm actually here till Friday. I have the other key. I can come down and we can switch the credit cards. I can do that in about an hour. They did, from Wednesday to Friday, yes. Thank you so much. Welcome to living in a hotel for a week. My apologies.
No worries.
But it was a trip, bro, because when you're traditional TV, and then I was mainly digital for 7-8 years, and then it was, hey, you're going to host a television show. When I came into TNT that first night, I was fully expecting, like, okay, so here's how this is going to go, and this is what you're going to do, and we'll make this easy on you. And instead, like, I sat down at the meeting and there was like 60 people there and they're like, all right, top of the show, Lefko, what do you want to lead with? And there's that moment where you go, I'm either going to ask for help, and I don't want to say fake it till you make it, or I'm just going to go. And so we just went, and that was very invigorating. And then to see, like, Wade and Candace, like, asking me, like, presentation questions and, like, really working with them on, hey, I think, Dwayne, like, you've gone viral twice with stories you've told. Let's talk throughout the week about the players that are in this game, any stories you have, because clearly that's resonating with people. Hey, Candace, you went viral because you corrected Shaq in that he thought people go through screens, and you broke it down in an X's and O's ways that switching, people really like the way that you analyze a game. And so we would just kind of work together because Candace had done players only before, Wade had never done TV before, and Shaq is Shaq. And so to build that chemistry was really great. And then when Jamal came in, it was even more fun for me because I had a firmer grasp on it. And Jamal is a sponge and he asks a million questions. Like, every show will be like, tell me how I did, for real. Like, don't lie to me. And I'll give it to him. You know what I mean? So it's fun, man. It's like being on any sports team you've ever been on. And you get done and we're high-fiving the camera people and Jamal's handing out, you know, insomnia cookies at 1 a.m. And it's a vibe. It really is a good time.
So were you guys working together during the bubble at all? Or was it like you had that first month and then you guys didn't get back together until the next season started at the end of the year?
I know that I moved to Atlanta for 7 months. That's what I mean. Like, there was a delay. And then I moved to Atlanta from like January to August or something, or like August to April, one of those two. And so then I was able to go into the studio, and that's when we had the comically long desk with the huge plexiglass dividers.
Yeah.
Which was in it, like Ernie and I have laughed before. If you notice, we often both lean to the right. And part of the reason is you're trying to hear Shaq out of your non-IFB ear. And Shaq now knows like to like touch my shoulder because it's at such a low register that you don't always hear the words that he says.
Right.
And so when we had a plexiglass divider, I was like, Shaq, you just need to yell. Because like, you have a producer in your ear being like, hey, we got to get to the Nets highlights next. They got music going. I'm listening. I'm trying to process what Candace is saying. And then to my right is, I don't know. And you're like, what the hell are we? So, no, that was a trip. Yeah, but that, you're right. That, it goes like 2019 and then like COVID. I don't know what happened in those 2 years and then 2022.
How beneficial is it to have Shaq there? Because like Candace Parker and Jamal Crawford, they're great analysts, but Shaq has the star power and clout that like as great as Jamal's playing career was in the NBA, if he calls a current star out, it doesn't necessarily have the same impact that that it does when Shaq says the same thing.
I was talking to Jason Kelsey about this, and I said, if we went to a foreign country and Taylor Swift was there and Shaq was there, who do you think is more famous? And he went, Taylor, wait, man, it is Shaq. Like, this is Shaq.
Yeah.
Like, if Shaq walked into the Oscars, like, Brad Pitt would be like, oh, and he would like push people out of the way and want to meet Shaq, you know, like, so I think it's so hard to quantify his impact on something. The other thing that Shaq has is a producer brain, in that a producer always knows when a segment's going too long. And Shaq always knows if we're being, if we've gone too long, not entertaining people. And so as a host, I've never enjoyed playing it by the script. I've always enjoyed working with people that can completely blow things up, and then we're reacting to that. And that's what Shaq provides. And I think that's why people love Shaq, is he comes in last night and he's got an umbrella, and then the next thing you know, he's got a wig on. He is so willing to embarrass himself for the entertainment of others, which is like such a kind, good-hearted thing to do. And I think he's also really willing to give a lot of credit to the other analysts. It's not a competition. You know, he's very willing to go, Jamal, you had amazing handles. What did you think about this? Or Candace, you've won 3 titles. What do you think about? And so he's freaking Shaq, man. He's a one of one.
Did you, or do you even feel added pressure on Tuesdays because of how successful Inside the NBA is?
No. So like, I'll say this, like I was just at breakfast downstairs, and someone came up to me and they were like, next Ernie. And I always correct people, because it is one of the greatest joys of my life to call that man my teammate. The fact that like somebody that I've looked up to, I can like sit down and game plan with and talk through things with. And like, I live in the present. I focus on the now. I got March Madness coming up, and I got TNT, and I have the podcast that I'm just trying to make good stuff. Like, I'm so like to be a part of the story of NBA on TNT and Inside the NBA. And I'm filling in for Ernie on Thursday, and I'm sitting there with Chuck and Kenny, and like the music's going to come on and I'm going to get chills. I'm enjoying it so much that I don't think about the pressure like that. And I think also when you've done TV enough, a camera is a camera is a camera. Like it's a dark circle that you look into, and you could put me on First Take. You could put me on the Awful Announcing podcast. Like, I'm going to just enjoy making shit anywhere I go. And so the fact that, like, when Chuck comes in, hey, man, what's up, bro? And we can, you know, or like I hug Ernie and he's like, what's up, kid? And or like me and Kenny are talking about like New York. The green room of TNT is the coolest place in the world to be to watch sports. And I'm kind of too busy enjoying it to worry if it's holding up to the legacy. Because I know, like, if you're in it, you're good. As soon as you start thinking, am I doing this right? Then you're forcing it. You're not being yourself, which is the ethos of Inside the NBA to me is don't be fake. You know, it's authentic all the time. And as soon as you go that way, I think it ruins everything.
There's camaraderie between the two shows. Like, obviously Shaq is a bridge for yep. Tuesday and Thursday, but the shows, do they feel separate, or it feels like one family?
You're in the same location, you know, you're working with the same equipment. The Thursday show in Atlanta, unlike in New York or LA, like, we have so much space in these studios that it's so big that the Thursday show faces one way, the Tuesday show faces the other way. I would say the Thursday show is like the big brothers of the Tuesday show. You know, like they've seen Candace come up from high school McDonald's All-American. You know what I mean? Like, when they see her, it's how's Layla? How's Goose, your son? You know, like, same thing with Jamal. So it's like a very good, tight relationship. The difference is in the producers and the people that are doing that. And then also, I would say the Tuesday show, we've always tried to focus more on the young players, where Charles can focus on the hard truths. You know, as when you work with analysts, you begin to realize in the first 5 years, they're either really tuned in, like Tony Romo when he first started, or they have incredible insights and connections to players and coaches. And then you see them make that pivot after about 5 years, where it's like, now I need my opinions to really fortify me. And so Tuesday is much more, we have a lot of insight and connections, and we really know, like, Jamal has seen all of these young players come up and he's worked with them and all of that. Whereas Chuck, he can look at it from 30,000 feet and he's going to be like, I know the Celtics are the best record in the NBA. They ain't making it. And so he's not said that, so that's not a good day. But
not the headline we'll run with.
Yeah, it's a different flow, so it really doesn't feel like we're stepping on toes.
Yeah. How much does getting to watch Ernie Johnson and work with him, how much has that influenced what you do as the point guard for the studio show?
One of the most valuable things I did was when I found out I was getting the job, I said, hey, in the first few months of the season, could I just come down one time and just watch it? I just want to see how the sausage gets made. And to see how Ernie goes into his own office, to see that he has 7 different colored markers, to see that he keeps a running log of every NBA team, which he updates every morning, to see how he works with the producers, he sits with the highlights, to realize that, like, sure, there's a lot of people behind the scenes, but that man is the heartbeat. What you see more than anything is, like, sure, you can try and copy the mechanics, but the more important thing is the seriousness in which he takes it. It's not showing up and making sure just that your makeup's right and all that. It's that when there's a meeting on Friday morning, I'm coming with ideas. When I'm sitting there and I'm with my 3-month-old son on a Saturday, an idea comes in, I'm firing up the group chats and I'm talking to all the producers, because when you see how serious he takes it and that allows everyone else to be free, that's what I really learned from him, is he takes on all of the preparation. He understands the entire flow of the show so that Chuck, Kenny, and Shaq can sit down. They trust that he knows everything. And then they can be free. I think when I watch a lot of other sports TV, I don't know if you feel like this, I feel like everybody already rehearsed what they were going to say. And so it's like, oh, you did your part well. Whereas in the Ernie job, it's like you've really studied for this open book test, but you have no idea what's coming. But you have all of your information so that if Chuck goes,
man, I really like the Houston Rockets. Who do they have the next three games?
That you have that. And so the amount of preparation to allow the other analysts to be free is really what I learned from him. And then work ethic, man. It's work ethic in the way that he treats people. You know, he knows the janitor's name. He knows the PA's name and the intern's name. And you're like, if he's not too good and too big for that, who the hell are you? Like, get over yourself. And so he's a GOAT, bro. Like, legit legend.
How has it been getting to know Charles Barkley?
So I got to know him the first match. I think we're on like Evolution 48 of the match. Yeah. But the first one, Tiger versus Phil, it was me, Chuck, Pat Perez, and Samuel L. Jackson. And that was like one of my first times on like pay-per-view TV. I had just started like dating my wife. She was there. And we had such a good time just like making fun of people. And the story I always tell is like, I'm doing highlights after the 18th hole and Chuck's going, Adam, Adam. And I'm like doing highlights. And I'm like, leave me alone. And he's like, we're going to go to the casino and get drunk. Here's my phone number, man. You were great. And like hanging out with him afterwards. I'm about to get emotional. He treats everybody so good, bro.
Yeah.
And like, you could be in a bar, he'll buy everybody a drink. He just wants to tell stories and have a good time. And, bro, he'll text me and be like, let me see a picture of your baby. Like, he's such a good person. Everybody is so good. But what I love about Chuck professionally, again, is I think Chuck has a photographic memory. And we all think that he's goofy and silly. And everyone loves to say how he'll sit there on a Thursday night and he'll have Dateline on one TV. He'll have, like, The Voice on another TV. He'll have the NHL game, an MLB game, and then two basketball games. And that dude remembers everything from all of them. And so a lot of people like to point that out, like, oh, he's all over the place. And I'm like, no, I don't think you guys realize that he might be a savant. And that when he sees things, he never forgets. And when he comes on set and out of nowhere, he's like, I just want to say the new chicken sandwich from Chick-fil-A. He knew that that was like a big talking point. And it might seem impromptu, but I think there's a master plan. And that's been cool to see.
Do you believe that he's going to retire soon and not see the full contract through? I mean, he's been saying it for a long time.
That's why I busted his balls on that. I was like, bro, you just taught me a new negotiation tactic that I didn't know existed. I was like, I didn't know that, like, because if you're Chuck, you're like, where are you going to go? You know what I mean? But if you're just like, hey, I just might not do this anymore.
Yeah.
That was pretty impressive. But with the amount of money that they paid him, I think he's very, very happy. And I also think, you know, this is a really exciting time in terms of the NBA and media. And I have no idea what's going to happen, but I do know that, you know, TNT is woven into the fabric of the league. And I think Chuck understands his place. And I think he wants to make sure that TNT Sports and its connection with the NBA will last for a long time.
I don't know that there's another studio show. Well, I know that there's not another studio show in any sport on any network with a personality that, like, if that person left that show, it would cause the outcry that would happen on inside the NBA if any of them left. You know, there's turnover every year on ESPN studio shows. Every NFL shows are they're always changing, and those changes never garner the reaction that TNT will get when, whether it's Barkley or Ernie or Kenny or Shaq, if any of them leave. So what makes that group so special and so unique?
I think, one, they perfectly fit role wise, where you have Ernie, who's going to steady the ship, have all the stats and know everything that's going in the NBA. You have Chuck, who's this complete wild card with crazy takes. You have Kenny, who also understands when to push the buttons of the other people to get them. When Chuck says something crazy, Kenny will push it further to get to like the real magic that's there. And then you have Shaq, who's like one of the few people that can sit across from Charles Barkley and call him an idiot and say, you have no rings. And so like a perfect foil to Chuck. And so I think one, there's just a perfect symmetry and combination from an execution perspective. Two is what I said before. They're all really great people that love each other. They've been through a lot, and they're at the point of their lives where they're so appreciative for friendships like that, that there is no ego. They don't give a crap how much each other makes. Shaq definitely doesn't. You know what I mean? Like they're at a point now where they know how rare it is to have that. And that's why I tell them all the time. I was like, go forever. Like, we're all going to watch. And no, it's special. I think also a big testament does go, he retired last year, Tim Kiley, the producer, who was really in the beginning. I would just sit with him when we would go on the road and just ask for stories as just a fan of the show, and how in the beginning, like, he called out Shaq a few times and was like, you're doing too much physical comedy. Like, it takes a lot of people. Tara August was there, Craig Barry, Scooter Vertino. Like, these are people that have been there really for a long time. And we see where it is now, but I have to imagine the beginning, there were some foundational discussions that were like, I know we don't have guardrails, but let's imagine they're right here. And so I think it was monumental, but I agree with you. No other show even feels like it. None.
And I get why you personally want to focus on the now and not pay attention to, potentially being Ernie's successor or anything like that. But I am curious if earlier in your career, did you have that same mentality? Like when you were in Nebraska, I would imagine you had to have been chasing something.
So my friend Salehi Bembury is like the top sneaker designer in the world. And he designed for Versace, he designed New Balances, like the Crocs that just blew up. That was him. And to have someone that I went to college with achieve his dreams, that like we would sit and play 2K in college and he'd be like, I want to design sneakers. And I would legit say, like, I want to host the NBA on TNT. Like, I can't even fathom what the hell is happening right now. And if I ever take it for granted and I start wanting more, like Shaq and I will always sit there and talk about how important it is to just kind of have gratitude and to not want and to not be like it will come. And so for me, it's like people will be like, what's next? And I'm like, yeah. Bro, there will be a time where I'm not doing this anymore. And I can guarantee you that I will look back at that time and go, man, that was great. So if I'm not like this right now, like if I'm not like Secretariat with the blinders on, I'm going to resent myself so much. But no, NBA on TNT was always the GOAT. Like it was always the goal for me.
Yeah.
And so to have it now is wildly surreal.
Did anything ever come of your Monday Night Football audition tape with Pat McAfee?
I love working with Pat because Pat is one of those crazy brains that you always could see this guy is special. And the one thing I'll say that I got from my, I love doing that stuff. So that was actually a radio bit that I used to do in Louisville, Kentucky, where I would have callers call in and I would play different musical intros from different, like it would be like the NHL, like on ESPN. And I would just practice being a play-by-play guy and then put people on the spot to be the color commentator. I just love doing that shit. I'm a weirdo like that.
How did those callers do?
Most of them 90% of them would be like, well, I'm sorry. And they would hang up because they'd be so embarrassed. It would be like, All right, we are here at Arrowhead Stadium getting ready for Chiefs-Raiders, an incredible game between Patrick Mahomes and the Super Bowl champs and a competitor that's trying to get it done. I'm joined, of course, by Brandon, who's ready to break it down. Brandon, how do you see today's game unfolding?
Silence.
That's it. And so I remember I was in Newhouse and a reporter came in and he just did like a stand-up like that. And I was so blown away at his ability to just go that I was like, I want to do that. Yeah. And so it was really practicing that. But on Pat had me on his show back when he was doing a morning thing in New York. I don't even know what it was. And they put me in the YouTube clip as Bleacher Report workhorse Adam Lefko. And it's so funny because when you're a host or talent or whatever, how people describe you, it's usually based on the show that you do. Yeah. So I'm going to be NBA on TNT's Adam Lefko. That's how I'm typically talked about. But when Pat's people, whether it was Ty or Boston, Connor, whatever, called me workhorse, I was like, dang, that really is who I am. Like, I'll do 30 videos a day for Bleacher Report and then do a podcast and then hop on a plane and do a show. And then I'm about to leave here and go open cards for Fanatics. You know what I mean? And then a little bit. And so Pat probably doesn't even realize this, but being called that, I was like, no, bro, that's exactly who I am. I'm going to outwork everybody. But I love Pat.
Have you been on his show since he moved to ESPN?
Not ESPN. I was on it last year to preview the playoffs and the NFL draft. So April before that shift happened.
Did you envision this type of sports media dominance from Pat years ago?
When I heard that he was responsible for like 20 to 25% of the money bet on FanDuel when he was at FanDuel, I remember hitting up my agent and being like, you do realize that Pat's about to take over the world. Because during the pandemic, I pivoted a lot of my energy to understanding business and meeting with CEOs and trying to be advisors at company. And you know, I've always been a content guy. And so whenever I would meet with CEOs, they'd be like, you have a marketing brain. And I was like, I get it, but I want to understand the executive brain. It is so rare to find people that can cause people to spend money that when I heard all of FanDuel, I was like, Pat could write his check anywhere, man. Like, that's power because it's just so rare.
I want to ask about the breaking the Doc Rivers news. And
sure.
Like, I remember I had it on TV kind of in the background that night. I heard the words breaking news and CNN and instantly like that caught my attention. And I was like, uh-oh, like what's about to happen?
Yeah, never there was did I a think primary that night too.
Yeah. Never did I think that it was going to be about Doc Rivers, but how surprised were you when you were there crediting CNN Sports with that report?
So I'm not going to give everything, but I'll give as much as I can. So I was walking out to set and the producer got in my ear and he's like, we have some news. And I was like, okay. And they were like, yeah. So like Doc Rivers, you know, they've officially offered him the job or he's accepted it, I think was the wording. And so we probably had about 2 minutes and I was like, where is this coming from? And they're like CNN. And then they told me how they got it. And then Scooter Vertino, I do not know his official job. He, to me, is like my weather vane of journalistic integrity and just like morality. And so I was able to talk to him really quickly, and he told me the full story. And it came from the source. Somebody got it from Doc, okay? Yeah. And so once I heard that and I read some of the emails and I saw the chain of command at CNN and the checks and balances that they did, believe me, I am never expecting to go into a TNT Tuesday and break news. At this point, we've all been conditioned that it's either Shams or Woj or Chris Haynes or somebody. And so when that happened and I saw all the background and then they were like, okay, we're going to credit CNN Sports. I was like, okay, because I know that if it's not CNN Sports, guess who's going to be the person?
You.
Me. Yeah. And so we did all the right checks and balances. This goes back to like my news reporting days where luckily you have that kind of training. But then to watch the internet the rest of the night, like I went into like Scooter's office with the producer and we're hanging out and I was like, can we reread those emails one more time?
Yeah.
Because everybody was like putting up like pictures of CNN Sports website and they're like, what? And the fact that CNN had a primary on that night, they had no other information coming out. And I was DMing with Worldwide Wob in the morning, and he didn't see yet that it had come out everywhere else. And he was so excited because it was rare. Like I've never wanted to be a newsbreaker. That's never again, Ahmad Rashad. I'm not trying to break news like that. But when it happens, you got to be prepared. And so it was a cool experience. It really was.
Yeah. No, I was curious if you did get to look into it yourself, or if it was more just like you're live, like this is coming into your ear right now. Jamal Crawford's surprise, I think, was all of us when he just like CNN, you know?
Like, yeah, that he knew, like that was also like the second or third time. And I was like, you're just playing to the internet right now. And I don't appreciate that at all. I was very prepared because that was like in a tweener. So we have pregame, halftime, tweener, halftime, postgame. And you don't always have a tweener, because sometimes the first game goes long. And so that, I think, was in the tweener or at halftime of the first game. And unless I really heard the chain of command, I would have just said, let's talk about this before the next segment.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we're here until 2 a.m. We don't need to rush this, you know? But once I heard everything and I saw everything, it was like, if we don't go for it, like, why are we even doing this show? Like, if you have it and you don't go for it, then you're just a reaction show. And so let's be the show of record for the NBA tonight.
So were you at all bothered when, like, because not only was Woj and Shams, they weren't just quiet on it, but then they kind of countered it. And even Chris Haynes countered it, which I think that was the biggest surprise when Chris Haynes did it, being that he's a colleague.
I think that would be our only regret, was that our communications weren't fully open to show. I don't communicate with Chris during the night, but I think somebody had to reach out and be like, here is the facts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Believe me, there was a part of me that was sweating, you know, cause it officially got confirmed the next day on my flight back to New York. And so, right before takeoff, I get like the Woj bomb that's like, they are indeed signing Doc. And it was one of those where like I put the hood over my head and I slept like a baby on the plane. But like the night before, there was definitely a part of me that was like, you know, I would really love for this news to get confirmed right now. That would be really nice. Yeah.
And then the last thing is, how was getting to host the night that LeBron broke the all-time scoring record?
So I remember leading up to that thinking it would be cool if he did it on Tuesday, but they play the Bucks on Thursday, the franchise that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar played for. It will be like a super primetime game. Tuesday was against Oklahoma City, which is not the Oklahoma City of this year. It was the Oklahoma City of last year, so they were not the number one seed. And then I remember we showed him walking in. And he was wearing all black. And Candace looked at me and she went, he's going to break this shit tonight. And it was just the way he was looking. And then Shaq was like, he was like, who else is in the audience? And like Jay-Z was there. And he was like, he's doing it. He's like, you don't see these people as like an all-time athlete and then go, let me only score 25 tonight. So you know, I spent the whole weekend before looking up enough stuff just in case. And then when you realized it was happening, right as the first game started, me, Keith Robinson, the producer, and everybody else were like, if it happens tonight, we had like multiple plans. If it happens tonight and they win, if it happens tonight and God forbid they lose, like what's that energy going to be like? If it doesn't happen tonight, but he's really close. So we had everything. And I think the thing that I'm most proud of is like my wife makes fun of me that sometimes I'm like an 80-year-old man. And by that, I mean, like, my favorite thing to do is on a Friday, I go to a coffee shop, I bring a book and a notebook, and, like, I read until ideas come into my head, and then I write ideas down. And that's, like, I love that. And I have one part of my notebook that is all just quotes that I really, really love or that resonate with me. And then sometimes throughout the year, I'll go, could any of these ever be used, kind of like Seinfeld cast or Rap cast, could any of these ever be used in a basketball television situation that could really, like, sum things up or really connect with the audience? And when the game ended, I opened that page for some reason. And there was the quote, which was, throw me to the wolves and I'll come back leading the pack. And I was like, he literally has a tequila brand with a wolf on it. And, like, if any NBA player has ever been thrown to the wolves, yeah, and then came and let, it's freaking LeBron James. And so my favorite moment from that night is, we thought he was going to, like, walk around and do all these things. And so we were prepared for 5 to 10 minutes of just talking. And we were going to talk about history and show highlights. But he made a beeline for the TNT desk and he put on the headset. And so I'm doing the intro. I have no idea what words are falling out of my mouth because I'm watching this camera of him putting on the headset that's not on TV, and I don't want him to wait. So I'm trying to make sure that my words are, like, coming down as he's going on. And then when he comes on and I'm in a two box with LeBron and I do the line and I say, leading the pack, how's the view? I, like, he started answering and I, like, kind of was like, and I was like, I just blacked out. And then I look up and Jamal Crawford's looking at me, grinning from, like, ear to ear, just like a shit-eating grin. And he always says to me, did you ever think you would do something like that? Like, he's great at, like, and he looks at me and he mouths, did you ever think? And at that moment, it was like, this is a Halley's Comet. That record stood for 36 years. Before that, it stood for 18 years. Before that, it's been exponential, the leading scorer, that by that math, LeBron's might not get broken for 72 years, if ever.
Yeah.
And so to have the honor of being there at that moment, at that time, and getting to talk to Kareem and getting to do that whole thing and feeling like we as the Tuesday show did right by LeBron's legacy and the viewers that night – it was one of those moments where, like, me and Candace had a glass of wine after the show, and it was like, that was fun. Like, that was a rush. And for these athletes, the number one thing that they miss when they retire is that rush, is that feeling of, I need to ball out right now.
Yeah.
And that was one of those moments where we all left the show and we're, like, hugging each other, and we're like, we did that, man. That was dope. So it was very, very cool. Thank you for, like, reminding me of that.
Yeah, no, it's awesome stuff. Really good. Adam, you were great. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. I really appreciate it.
Appreciate you. Appreciate everybody at AA for holding me down all these years. And thanks, man. This was fun.
That is Adam Lefko. I'm Brandon Contis. This is the Awful Announcing Podcast. Please rate and subscribe to this podcast. Please also subscribe to Awful Announcing's YouTube page. But regardless of how you consume Awful Announcing and the Awful Announcing Podcast, thanks for listening and be good.
Thanks for listening to the Awful Announcing Podcast. For the latest news spanning the sports media landscape and more, check out awfulannouncing.com and follow us at awfulannouncing.com.